Hello, everybody. Welcome back to For the Girls. This weekend is the Australian Grand Prix. We will be watching at Wicked Willie's in New York City. The race starts at midnight on Saturday, so early slash late for us. Please join us if you're in New York. The link is in our description to RSVP. It's totally free and open to anyone. So come watch with us. It'll be a blast. It's always fun to watch at night. And a little surprise for you all, in honor of the Australian Grand Prix, we have partnered with Bluestone Lane, which is an Australian coffee shop and cafe, to give you all a free coffee over the Grand Prix weekend. The link is in our bio to download the app and use the reward. They have locations all over New York City, LA, SF, DC, Boston, Philly, Texas. The list goes on. So check if there's a location near you and you can get a free coffee over the Australian GP weekend. Super exciting. All of our current merch items are on sale in anticipation of a very exciting announcement. So stay tuned for that, but you can get our merch line. The only thing that will be staying in the new merch line is our hat. So if you want anything else, get it before it's gone. And with that,
stuff is very cool. So you might want to hold out.
Great plug. With that, I'm Tiggy.
I'm Chessa.
And I'm Sarah. Getting into our Australian Grand Prix preview, it's a big weekend in Australia. This Grand Prix and track is just such great energy all around. Everyone seems to absolutely love it. It always attracts a huge crowd. This is really high on our list of dream Grand Prix to attend. The Australian fans are known for being super loyal and amazing. They're such champs about watching races with a huge time difference, as opposed to in Europe or in America, where sometimes it's in the middle of the night. They have races in the middle of the night all the time. And in terms of some logistics, it's nice this year that the grid and the teams have a bit of a break between the last race in Saudi and the next races in Japan and China, because it's quite an operation getting everything to Australia, getting adjusted to the time change. So it's nice that it's not a double header.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what it's like. And I feel like this week the drivers were all getting to Australia also a lot earlier than they usually do. Like, they're all already there, and usually, you know, on a doubleheader weekend, of course, it takes them a little bit of time. But everyone's very excited. I was watching like some random Instagram reels where like all these talk shows in Australia, comedy shows, things like that, are just like plugging the GP, making jokes.
Throwback
like,
to when Chessa and I were on Australian TV for the Las Vegas Grand Prix. Oh.
How could you forget? How could you forget?
Great times.
Okay, so let's talk about the circuit. It's the Albert Park Circuit. It's a temporary semi-permanent track that they erect every year in the public park just outside of Melbourne Center. It's pretty gorgeous, and it's very unique because it is semi-permanent, so it blends aspects of the true road circuit with the street circuit, and most of the track is built on public roads, which is crazy. And then they also have a small section in a parking lot. And so they start setting this up, I think, 2 months before the Grand Prix, and it takes them 6 weeks to take it all down. So it's definitely a massive operation just for the weekend. It's 5.3 kilometers and 58 laps in total.
For some background on the track does have a lot of history. It first debuted the Australian Grand Prix back in 1996. But before 1996, there was racing in Australia, but they were held at the Adelaide Street Circuit from 1985 to 95. And its racing history outside of F1 goes back to the early 50s, when it was a big circuit on the Australian racing scene. So lots of great racing history in Australia, the kind of racing we can expect on this track. So until 2019, it was pretty much unchanged, and drivers were complaining about it being really bumpy, not a lot of overtaking opportunities. So the first race after COVID, after some of the cancellation years, they added some opportunities to pass. They laid a new road surface. They created a bigger pit lane. So it is much better racing these days, and the track is definitely considered to be on the higher end for aero downforce. So this will affect tire degradation, also the braking system. There are, I think, nine hard braking zones. And so apparently the drivers spend almost 20% of a given lap with their foot on the brake pedal. So that's really crazy. And then the other interesting thing to consider here is, as Chessa was saying, since most of the year portions of this track are open to the public, the road isn't as rubbered in as a usual circuit. So Friday, it starts to get rubbered in as the cars drive in practice, and then the conditions really improve for the race on Sunday. So just watch out for that, and time's probably getting faster as the weekend goes on.
20% of a lap with their foot on the brake pedal. That's insane. That's like when I drive normally.
For last year's race was chaotic. Our Australian Grand Prix recap from last year is actually our most played episode ever. That's wow. A great
It beats our Lewis Hamilton to Ferrari episode. Like, it beats all these crazy news episodes. This race was wild.
Wow. Well, I don't you all love the Australian Grand Prix and love some craziness.
Yeah, that race was amazing. I don't think we'll ever have anything like it, at least maybe not this year, sadly. But we had 3 red flags, 8 DNFs, so only 12 cars finished, a triple world champion podium, 373 podiums, and 11 drivers' championships between Max, Alonso, and Lewis up there at the time. Okay, Sarah, walk us through what actually happened during the race.
The first red flag was from Albon having a huge shunt. He hit the wall and ended up parked just right on the racing line. They first only called a safety car, so George and Carlos went to pit, but they later red flagged it, which was confusing, really horrible for George and Carlos. It's always super tough when that happened. Then we had a Max Lewis front row full standing restart. Everyone was so excited about that since it had been a few years.
It was giving 2021.
since we got that dynamic. And then there was a second red flag because lap 53 – K-Mag grazed the wall, his tire popped off, originally a safety car, but then it became a red flag. The drivers were just quite unamused at this point, and they needed to do a standing restart with only 2 laps left. So the last 10 minutes of this race were just pandemonium.
Then the third red flag, there was just huge chaos on the restart. Alonso got clipped, Logan hit DeVries, Gasly and Ocon wrecked each other. Like, it was just an absolute bloodbath in the last couple laps. And then the remaining 12 cars did a standing restart just to do one more lap of racing. And so it was kind of a bit of a mess. There was a lot of frustration with the FIA over the red flags being thrown. It seemed like only the third red flag was actually deserved, and the others that like started as safety cars but became red flags were frustrating for people. So in the end, we had Max Lewis, Alonso on podium, Lance Stroll P4. Okay.
Oh my God, I forgot about
and
that.
And then Checo had a pit lane to P5 drive, so he had an amazing race. But Ferrari, really rough race in terms of pace, 0 points. But the big highlight was Oscar snagging his first points in F1 in front of his home crowd, delivered amidst a ton of chaos. And at that time, the McLaren wasn't the sort of rocket ship that it is now. And we also can't forget that everyone was still kind of a little bit salty about Danny losing his seat, being the Aussie hero, him racing at home. So it was just an amazing, amazing weekend for Oscar.
And we also can't forget the year before that Seb got fined for riding the moped on the track.
Yeah, poor Seb.
Was that 2022?
2022, yeah. That was a radio of the week, I think.
All right, let's talk about the teams and what we can expect. I have the pleasure of beginning with Red Bull this morning. Okay. They have back-to-back 1-2s. It's a very formidable start for them. I think they will continue on this upward trajectory if all signs point there. But as of the time of recording this on the team itself, we have no update on the Christian Horner situation. Of course, we're following it closely and we'll keep you all updated. But I think the biggest thing to think about here is everything looks really well for the team. Checo's been pulling out his P2s as he should. But how do we think the team is feeling about Checo?
This is the start of the season that he needed, I think. I think there's probably still some doubt since the past several years. He's really come out hot at the start of the season and then really dropped off as the season progressed, either with car development or just not being able to keep up with Max as the season went on. But I think this is exactly what he needed to prevent kind of discussion in the front half of the season about his future. I think it'll still be a big conversation in silly season and for 2025. But I think with even just a couple strong performances, he's incredibly decreasing the odds that there's some crazy mid-season switch. Things can always change, but this was kind of exactly the performance he needed to start the season.
Yeah, I feel like it's too soon to say anything either way, but I definitely agree. Like, this is exactly what he needed. And also with all the turmoil internally right now at that organization, having someone who is a bit of like a steady ship, if you can call Checo that, is probably not a horrible thing in the team. So we'll see what happens. But for Ferrari, as of recording right now, it hasn't been 100% confirmed, but Carlos is likely to be back in the car for Australia. So after a strong start in Bahrain, we're really rooting for him to get back up there on the podium after his appendectomy. Albon was back racing in 2 weeks, so hopefully Carlos will be able to do the same. Something else, Gunther started a column for F1.com. He was talking about how impressive Ollie Berman's debut was and why Haas or somebody should sign him. But it was making me think about what do we predict Ollie's 2025 holds? Do we think he'll have a seat, or do we think he's still a little young and there's not, you know, a spot for him? But what do we think after that debut?
It was such an excellent debut. He will for sure be at the top of everyone's minds during the silliness that definitely will be this year's silly season. We have so many seats up for grabs. So I think he'll definitely be considered, but like, we can't forget that there's a lot of other up-and-comers. Like Liam Lawson had a similar situation last year when he stepped in for Danny and did incredibly well. So I think we'll definitely see at least one to two rookies. Will Ollie be that rookie? Time will only tell, but I'm excited for him.
Yeah, I think it depends on where there are seats. Like Ollie obviously has the Ferrari connection, and that goes hand in hand with Haas. So if there's a Haas driver that retires, I feel like Ollie's first in line for that. Like I don't necessarily see Liam Lawson jumping over team lines to get a Haas seat over Ollie.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I think it just all depends where there are seats available. But I do agree, like he'll be top of mind.
Yeah, I think it's hard. There's just so many talented up-and-comers. There's Felipe Drugovich. There's so many kind of F2 champion caliber drivers who don't have seats, especially with no rookies this year, that I think so much will have to fall into place for one of them to get a seat, including just luck and kind of where those opportunities line up. So he's clearly super talented, but I think it'll just depend on circumstances whether that actually translates to a seat.
I feel like with Formula One, everything is just so circumstantial. So we can say all of this stuff now, but who knows what's going to happen. To close out Ferrari, so really quick here, the team is doing much better this year, closing the gap to Red Bull. I don't think they're going to catch all the way up to Red Bull, but fun fact. So last year in Jeddah, when Checo won, the gap to Red Bull between Ferrari was 36 seconds. And then this year in Jeddah, the gap between Charles and Max, who was in P1, was only 18 seconds. They're definitely advancing, solidifying their potential P2 finishing in the championship, but definitely not, I don't think, going to be like true contenders to Red Bull's P1.
Yeah, I also think it's so early. Saying they're solidifying P2 in the championship on race 3 feels like a hot take.
That's my hot take. It's going to be a long con. Just wait.
Well, they're looking good, that's for sure. For Mercedes, the team definitely seems a bit on the back foot so far this season. The car remains a bit of an elusive beast. Their trackside engineering director said that they're going to be experimenting a bit with the car, getting ready for Melbourne. So hopefully they'll be able to get more performance out of the car this weekend. Lewis had an amazing weekend here last year, as we talked about. So hoping that he can repeat that and come back in fine form. We did do a poll on Instagram to see how you all are feeling about who you want to replace Lewis. And I was actually kind of surprised by the results. So Carlos got 51%,
really?
Alonso 21%, Seb 15%, Max 12%. And I feel like that maybe lines up with likelihood, but the want question maybe is slightly different. I don't know. I was surprised Alonso came P2 there.
Sarah, who would you have expected to win this poll?
I think Carlos. And I guess I'm biased because I want Carlos to get that seat. He has so many very loyal fans who are really disappointed he lost the seat. So I think he might be the one here where there's a combination of the actual want and prediction, because I could envision him at Mercedes. I think he has the talent. I don't know if he has any type of existing relationship with the team, but maybe George can plug him over there. But I think he lines up most with kind of likelihood and want, since his fans are really, really going to want him to be able to get a seat at a top team instead of getting kind of relegated to the midfield. And I think this is definitely his best bet to do so. So I suspect behind the scenes, he's campaigning very hard for this seat right now.
It almost feels like too clean of a swap for me, like just to switch two drivers out.
When George made that comment about seeing all the names pop up on Toto's phone, maybe it's just Carlos like every 5 minutes.
Carlos and Carlos Sainz Sr.
Okay, let's talk about McLaren. Like we said, this is Oscar's home race. It's going to be so exciting for him. He got his first F1 points here last year, like Tiggy mentioned at the beginning, in P8. So I think he can definitely bring that or better this year. He's currently at P5 in the championship after only first two races. So very, very impressive. And overall, I think the team, you know, the car has been looking okay this year. It's not the rocket ship that we might have expected given their second half of the season performance last year, but they will be targeting a major upgrade for Miami or Imola. So pretty imminent, early beginning of the season upgrade.
Okay, friends, it's festival and concert season, and you know it's all about the boots this year. That's why you need to make Tecovas your number one place for festival style this spring. And don't forget to shop their seasonal and limited edition offerings, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. We love Tecovas. They have a first wear comfort, which basically means there's no break-in period. It's the best thing ever. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's really no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it to a store, though, just visit tecovas.com, tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. We all need a little extra health boost sometimes, and Fleur Marché makes it easy for us to supercharge our wellness. Their botanical wellness patches have been such a fun addition to our routine. We just stick them on wherever we want. They have them for sleep, relaxation, focus, and other things. And the patch delivers ingredients to your body in a subtle but effective way, and the results last up to 12 hours. Fleur Marché also has botanical gummies and their new organic nutritional powder Green Machine. They only use the best ingredients and are tested for potency, contaminants, and heavy metals before and after production.
And one of our favorite things, we also love that the company is founded and inspired by women with the mission of helping us feel 100% every single day so that we can have full energy and crush it every day. Find your new wellness essentials at fleurmarché.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 20% off your first order site-wide with promo code FORTHEGIRLS at checkout. Orders over $50 also get free shipping. Go to Fleur Marché, FLEURMARCHE.com. Use code FORTHEGIRLS for 20% off your first order.
For Aston Martin, team principal Mike Crack was very complimentary of Alonso, was saying he pushes them constantly on and off the track, that his attitude and leading by example is inspiring to the whole team. And Crack said that his personal main priority is keeping Alonso on for 2025, but he also noted that he's such a top driver, he's going to be a hot commodity, so we'll see. Meanwhile, there's continual questions about Lance and his performance. I think it's kind of the same holding pattern as last year of questions about whether he would ever lose his seat before his dad maybe sells the team, or if he would only lose that seat if there's a change in ownership. We'll see. Imagine part of silly season is Mr. Stroll selling Aston Martin.
It's not out of the realm of possibility. Oh, there were a couple of reports this week, not by motorsport or super reputable sources, but that Eddie Jordan was kind of calling Lance Stroll's performance underwhelming and putting a little bit of pressure on Lawrence Stroll to think about that when it comes to building a hopefully world championship contending team. So I think the internal pressure is mounting. For Williams, Albon joined the Beyond the Grid podcast and discussed a lot of interesting stuff. It's a really interesting listen if you haven't heard it yet, but things from, you know, how being a number one driver at Williams compares to his experience at Red Bull, how he's learning to lead a team and step more into that role of shaping and bringing a team up versus at Red Bull. He sort of just phrased it as, quote, just trying to survive. So it sounds like a very different experience, but also really good learning and leadership. And one thing he was noting, which surprised me actually, because I think we think of Albon as one of the more experienced drivers, but he said he's tied for like fourth least experienced driver on the grid, which is super interesting. So because I don't really think of Albon that way, but it shows how he's stepped well into the Williams role. He was also saying that they've changed the philosophy of the car completely and the philosophy of the team with James Vowles. And he said in a good way that it stretched the team to its limits and that they have a good foundation now, but it definitely takes a lot of time. So it sounds like there's still a lot of room to grow. So that's on Albon. On Logan Sargeant, someone in our Ask Us Anything asked what Logan needs to do to keep his seat. I thought that maybe it was a better discussion to be had live versus
that's a good way to save it for the pod.
But I'm curious what you all think. I mean, I know it's still early this season, but this is probably his last chance if he's not performing.
Yeah. In classic James Vowles nature, I feel like he's so diplomatic and so good about this thing. He spoke last week about this a little bit, and it wasn't sort of like a what he needs to do in like a certain period of time, but it was much more like, we just want to see Logan push himself. We just want to see Logan develop and like continue to move forward. So I don't think there's like, Logan, you need to get 2 points by Melbourne or like something like that. But I think Logan needs to be failing forward, if that makes sense, in this car. He cannot be failing backwards and making silly mistakes.
Yeah, Alex was also saying on this podcast that it's a lot more difficult to be a rookie now than when he was back in like 2017, 2018, and that the cars are much more difficult to handle and that they're much, much more punishing on any sort of understeer or oversteer. And, you know, obviously there are a lot of rookies and new people out there doing it and doing it well, but he's just, I thought it was an interesting comment that it's a little bit more difficult to be a rookie now and to handle a car than it used to be.
For VCARB or the Racing Bulls, it is Danny's big return to his home race, his first time in 2 years and first time under kind of promising circumstances as opposed to some of the McLaren difficulties. He said, quote, let's say my season will start there, as in Australia. He really needs to show what he's got here if he wants a real chance of keeping his seat next year. Helmut Marko even said he, quote, has to show something quickly. There's a lot of work to be done. Helmut Marko never won to mince words about driver performance. That being said, Laurent Mekies was incredibly complimentary of Danny, saying having in the team had just been a game changer, that he's really bought into the project at Red Bull. Laurent Mekies also spoke out about Yuki, saying he's hoping Yuki can make a big step in his fourth season in F1, especially with Danny as an experienced reference point. I think Yuki being in his fourth season is a really interesting note here, because I feel like sometimes he's still discussed almost as if he's a rookie or an up-and-coming talent or so much future room for development. But 4 seasons is definitely not rookie territory anymore.
And also, I mean, Yuki outperformed Danny last week, so we'll have to continue to see who's really number one at VCARB based on performance. For Alpine, so last year, Ocon and Gasly crashed into each other, as we mentioned early, knocked each other out of the points. And I think given that and given the kind of rough start they've already had to this season, it feels like there's only the only way that they can go is up from here, aka they just need to both finish the race. Like, they don't even need points. So I think for them, they'll just see what they can do. But what do we think? Are they doomed this season? Can they – do they have it in them to pull, like, a McLaren comeback as the season goes with upgrades? Or do we just feel like the organizational reshuffle and turmoil has been too much and they just need to lay some foundation this year and then maybe try again next year?
I think it's so – it seems like such a cursed start to the season, but you can never say never in F1. You know, nobody would have predicted that Aston Martin would have come out swinging last year or McLaren would have had the rise that they did. That said, Aston Martin had a multiple-time world champion in Alonso. McLaren arguably has the strongest driver pairing on the grid. I think Gasly and Ocon are both great drivers, but I think there are factors that McLaren and Aston had at play that Alpine doesn't. And with all this internal turmoil, yeah, it just feels really difficult. Like, the morale of the team feels really low, at least from the outside. I mean, who knows what's going on internally, but it can't be pretty. So it feels tough, but that doesn't mean that they can't come back. I just feel like it feels like a little bit more of an uphill battle than maybe some of these other teams who've pulled off a great return.
Yeah. I wouldn't say doomed, but I also wouldn't not say doomed. I'll wait for next year.
Chesa's hedging. For Stake Kick Sauber F1 team, basically a home race for Bottas, who was on the poster with Oscar and Danny. I absolutely love that. Our third Australian of the mix, who's really just Finnish. But
that's so great.
It's the mullet. It's the mullet giving it
Aussie vibes. Also, Tiffany's Australian, so Bottas has a lot of Australian things going for him here. But they're definitely hoping to come back stronger after a P17, P18 finish last race in Saudi. But there was a really interesting piece by Lawrence Barreto on F1.com about Bottas and Bottas saying that he could see himself competing for another 5 years or so, which is interesting. Kind of, we've talked about almost the opposite of like what's keeping Bottas going. It feels like maybe he could retire. He's kind of languishing in the back of the grid. But the way Bottas phrased it, he was saying, I have a great balance now. I feel it's really sustainable. I feel like I'm performing well in the car. I can maintain my energy levels, and mentally I feel great, which is interesting because he does have a lot of stuff going on and it does feel like he's living a great life. But also it's kind of tough to be in a back of the grid car when he is the most decorated driver outside of Alonso who is available in the driver market at the end of this season. So, but Barreto was saying that Bottas's main goal is to stay with Sauber, meaning he would be targeting an Audi seat. But I'm curious what you guys think about his future, where he goes from here, if Mercedes is potentially on the table. Obviously, he has a lot of history at that team. So I'm curious what you guys think.
I definitely don't think Mercedes is on the table, but I really hope that he gets a solid 2025, 2026 opportunity, whether that's staying and hoping to get Audi for 2026 or moving to another team. It's hard to see him at the back of the grid. I'm such a fan. He's such an incredible driver. And people remember when he was really challenging Lewis. Like, now we have the Red Bull 1-2. It used to be Ham Verbot, where every podium was Hamilton, Verstappen, and Bottas. Like, Bottas was always up there, clearly the number two to Lewis, but still grabbing pole positions, wins, keeping Lewis on his toes. So he's just so talented. I really hope that either Audi can come out strong in 2026 or he can find another good option.
Okay, and to wrap up our teams here with Haas, I think the only thing that we can say for them is it's been a pleasant surprise for the first two races of the season, not coming in P19 and P20, despite their team principal, Komatsu, literally forewarning that at the beginning of the season. So yay, Haas. The vibes are always strong. Love you guys. Okay. Let's do our hot takes and predictions. Sarah, you go first.
I'm going to say, since I was just talking about Bottas and the points.
Slay.
Okay. I like that. That's a good – that's what hot takes should always be.
Perfect. Unlikely and very specific.
I'm going to keep it rolling.
But also slightly doable.
With our Australian hot takes, because I'm just going to count Bottas as Australian at this point. I'm going to say an Oscar podium, and he does a shoey on the podium in true Aussie form.
Love that.
All right, the Australian roll call continues. I'm going to say Danny top five.
Let's go.
Which is a super hot take, but the V-Carb will fly this weekend. Just you wait and see.
For some quick news this week. So F1 has announced it's abandoning the 16-inch tire plan for the 2026 regulations, opting to stick with the bigger 18-inch tires that we have now. The goal behind this was really just to reduce the weight on the 2026 cars, which are supposed to be slightly smaller, but Pirelli was against the smaller downsize for the tires for two reasons. One, they would have had to change their entire production process, which is expensive and complicated. And then two, it'd be seen as sort of a step backwards in the broader auto industry. And there were also concerns about smaller tires overheating more quickly and having worse performance. So the tires will still be changing to accommodate the new cars, but it looks like we'll be sticking with the 18-inch tire for the foreseeable future.
In other news, Felipe Massa filed a lawsuit in London High Court again against the FIA, FOM, and Bernie Eccleston over Crashgate at the 2008 Singapore GP. This is the news story that has literally been going on for – it's the ongoing news story. It's nice
decades.
To always have one that's always live. Okay. As a reminder, Crashgate was when Nelson Piquet Jr. crashed intentionally at the Singapore GP, triggering a safety car that allowed Alonso, Piquet's teammate at Renault, to take the victory. Lewis won the championship that year by just 1 point. So Massa is seeking an estimated $100 million in losses.
This is so old. I feel like we've talked about this several times, that Felipe Massa is trying to bring this back. I think everyone was over this by 2012, which is still 14 years ago. And even though it's definitely really upsetting that he feels like he lost the championship by only 1 point, there's even more recent history of controversy over that that I think is more fresh in people's minds. So I think in terms of the F1 community and just publicly, he's not going to have a lot of support for bringing back something that happened so long ago. And a championship just can't be reopened after this amount of time.
Yeah.
It was so long ago. We all know you were within a point. Like, you could have won it. Great. We all know you're so great. Why? It must be like a money thing. I don't know. I just don't really see the point of this at all.
Yeah, I think it is a money thing. And I think it's also just a proving a point on principle thing, because he feels like he was cheated out of a championship, but also out of all the money and endorsements that come with being a world champion. Which I get that frustration, but it's, yeah, let it die. Let it die, my friend. And lastly, in news, Andretti revealed pictures of their U.S. factory that would house the Andretti Cadillac F1 team, signaling that they are pushing ahead as if they will be let in eventually. They're working, interestingly, with the partner that designed the new Aston Martin campus in Silverstone, amongst many other UK F1 facilities. So they're clearly taking the F1 project very seriously, despite the setback. But I don't know. The road looks tough in the short term, but I'm hoping that they can get in. Like we said a few episodes ago, all they need is Max Verstappen to sign on as their driver, and they're good.
They must have some sort of like inside information, like with the amount of certainty that they seem to be going into just like building an entire millions and millions of dollars project. So
I find it so fascinating. They have just been repeatedly rebuffed by the F1 team principals, F1 itself, and instead just proceed full force as if they've been guaranteed entry. So it seems like a high risk, high reward endeavor, but I definitely think their persistence could potentially pay off. Maybe they'll just wear down Toto eventually.
Toto holds the keys to the kingdom.
Wrapping up, it's going to be an amazing race weekend this weekend, late weekend or very early morning for most of us. If you're in and around New York City and want to hang out at 12 a.m. Sunday morning, Saturday night with us, come to Wicked Willy's. The RSVP link is in our bio and in the show description. So join us there. We can't wait to see you all. And reminder, you can still join Grid Rival if you haven't already. So see us there as well.
And don't forget about the free coffee from Bluestone. Just download the app, use the link in our episode description, and happy race watching.